Good evening, and welcome to another episode of the Full Press Raiders Podcast. I'm your host, Terrence Biggs. Well, the Raiders did what they needed to do. It wasn't pretty. No one cares. It's not about aesthetic wins and pretty losses. It's about wins. They emerged from Cleveland with a 16-6 victory. To break this down, you know him. You love him. His content on Twitter is some of the very best. Our guy, Ryan Holmes. Ryan, how are you doing this morning, man?
I'm doing good. Got a big win today. So it's always good to finish a Sunday with a W.
I was stunned. Now, we need to kind of go right into it where there was apparently right tackle Trent Brown had rushed to the hospital. There was an accident with his IV, air in his bloodstream. Now, from what you have seen as far as the reaction to Brown's career with the Raiders, were you shocked to see so many people jump on his back about missing today's game before they found out what exactly happened?
I was. There was a lot of backlash on Twitter. Just, he's never available. He's always hurt. It's always something with this guy. But if you really break it down, he was legitimately hurt to begin the season. In the Kansas City game, he played through injury. You could tell he wasn't moving like he normally does, but he was out there gutting it with his teammates. Unfortunately, gets COVID, misses a game. And then he's basically practiced one time in 3 weeks and getting ready to go play today, and there's a mishap with an IV. I think a lot of guys, or a lot of people on Twitter, just jumped to conclusions on that one rather than to wait to see what the real truth behind the story was.
It wasn't the most sparkling moment for the fan base. Actually, to be honest, I'm kind of embarrassed because people want to sit there and say, well, he stopped caring. The man is hurt. If he's hurt or sick, there's nothing you could do about it. It's not like he's out there, partying. He's sick or he's injured. It happens. And I always find it interesting that there are people who will hop behind Twitter fingers and say, they will say it through his face. Trent Brown is like 6'8 and 380 pounds. That's a very large human being. Chances are the majority of people wouldn't say it to his face. They would wait till they have a phone in front of them. Now, getting to the good part, which is the game, going in, what did you expect from Derek Carr going into the game?
Well, with the weather conditions, what they were supposed to be, I thought you'd get a guy that was going to be more of the game manager and basically just get us on the right run plays. You know, make the audibles, call out the front, work with Rodney Hudson, and, convert third downs. Just kind of move the ball. I had a feeling it was going to be a lot similar to the Bears game in London last year where you kind of thought they were overmanned. They're going to have to run the ball. The weather wasn't going to allow them to throw the ball down the field and be the offense that we have seen in 2020. This was more going to be a game where we saw more of a early 2019 offense where you're in a lot of 13 personnel, a lot of 22 personnel, and just try to run the football. And I think Derek did a really good job of converting with his legs on third down and keep the chains moving and put together two almost 9-minute drives there in the second half to kind of to get the game going along. And I think the big thing was you almost saw the fumble on the Myles Garrett play early. You almost saw an interception on that same play, but he didn't have that big mistake that you're used to seeing in those kind of conditions, although he did fumble down by the goal line. Luckily, Devontae Booker covered that, but there wasn't that big turnover, that back-breaking moment.
Believe it or not, and I know this is going to sound really, really strange, but of Derek Carr's performances this year, this one is my favorite for a couple of reasons. One, it's not about the numbers. It's not about the high completion percentage, which he didn't have in his game. He was 15-24 for 112 yards. Now, people are going to sit there and say, why do you like such a weird performance? It's how he gained those yards. It's the fact that Derek Carr ran for 41 yards, and he had an 18-yard scamper. I'm going to call it a scamper because when a team wins and your quarterback is using his athletic gifts, you can use funny, interesting words like scamper. He scampered for 18, and that, as someone who follows his team, brought the most beaming smile to my face to see him using his athletic gifts in year 7. And it's just, he looked aggressive. yes, the throws weren't there because of the wind, and we'll definitely talk about the one that he missed Ruggs on, but for a performance of an ugly performance, Derek Carr won ugly, and that is great. That is the best sign for this team, whereas people want to hang on to the fact that he is top 10 in passing completion percentage, all this nonsense. Today was a gritty win. This was a Gannon win, and I never say that. I've never compared those two, but this felt like a Gannon win. This felt like that gritty, like dirt under the fingernails type of victory where you could look back and say, huh, he gutted it out there. What was your impressions about Carr's performance today?
I think you hit the nail on the head there. It was just he needed to find a way to win in these conditions. And he said after the game it was probably the worst conditions he's ever played in. But to be able to like you said, get the right checkdowns, the quick passing game over the middle to Waller and Renfro, and just keep the sticks moving and hold on to the ball and just and not make those key bad plays that you've seen him do. There was pressure early. It wasn't a great first quarter start to the game. A couple sacks, a couple times where he held onto the ball. But I think as he got into the rhythm of the game, he kept the chains moving, and that was the big thing. Like you said, I think it was a really good game for him. I would probably take the KC game over this just because he threw the ball down the field and he took the shots that were there. That wasn't going to happen today. But overall, I think he played well. And a lot of it was stuff that happened to the line of scrimmage and the run game that the fans won't see in a box score.
And for me, I like the fact that, like you said, with that scamper, the offense piled up 208 yards on the ground. Now, this is versus a defense that is much better against the run than against the pass. The Browns were fifth coming into this game. Now, that could be misleading because their pass defense is brutal, but they came in fifth and they actually allowed twice as many yards on the ground. Now, when we come back, I want to talk about Josh Jacobs, and I want to talk about his day. And actually, I'm actually going to compliment John Gruden, and this must be a victory Sunday because the whole complimenting John Gruden is a new thing to me. You are listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast on FPC Radio Network. Terrence Biggs, Ryan Holmes. Ryan, when we look at Josh Jacobs and we look at how he was used, 13 of his 31 carries happened in the last quarter. That is, while I am not a fan of the overuse, John Gruden tried to save the best for last, and he actually saw Josh Jacobs close the show. When the Raiders drafted Josh Jacobs, did you envision this would be his type of game?
I didn't. He didn't have this kind of workload in college. You didn't see him carrying the ball 25, 30 times. I actually thought he'd be more involved in the pass game and kind of a guy that would get 15 carries and maybe 5 targets in the passing game a game. I didn't see him as a 25 to 30 carry old school between the tackles runner because he wasn't that type of player in college. But today was a day where he needed to be that guy. Devontae Booker spelled him pretty well with 5 or 6 carries, but I think you started to see some explosiveness in the lower half with Jacobs in this game that we haven't seen since week 1 with some of the jump cuts. And you saw him in the open field. He kind of gave you the Walter Payton stutter and just lowered his head and carried a guy for 5 or 6 yards. And you haven't seen that since week 1. And you started to see that and got into a rhythm. And I think this was by far the best game Jacobs had all year. And a lot of it was Gruden just feeding it between the tackles. You didn't see the crack toss. You didn't see him trying to get cute and get wide. It was literally line up and we're coming right at you. And they ran between the guards. I think Rodney Hudson, Gabe Jackson, when the film comes out, had very good games. Denzel Good had a good game inside. And you kind of needed to do that with Brandon Parker playing a lot of snaps at right tackle. Just run that thing downhill.
It was an adjustment that I liked because, that's like you said, it wasn't pretty. It was line them up and we're going to punch you in the mouth. And that's what they did. They punched the Browns in the mouth so many times in that game where by the time the fourth quarter rolled around, you could look at the body language of the Browns front seven. They didn't want any more. The Raiders actually executed a game plan that should possibly make John Gruden happy because they just sat there and they wore them out. They wore them down. Where after Myles Garrett was hurt and after Olivier Vernon turnstiled Sam Young before Sam Young was hurt, they were feeding Jacobs. And it was just, it was maybe my favorite Gruden game since he returned his second or this tenure with the Raiders. Just because it was an ego game. It was a will game. They snatched the will out of the Browns in front of the whole world, in front of all the supporters at home in that weather. And it just, I don't know. It set a tone. And you mentioned Brandon Parker. For years, we have waited for any light in the tunnel with Brandon Parker. Unfortunately, his light in the tunnel has been an oncoming train of just a defensive lineman just turnstiling him and just running by him. What did you see from the broadcast, which is, I know, is a lot different than All-22, but what could you pick up on the broadcast that astounded you about Parker's development in this game?
Well, like you mentioned earlier, Myles Garrett came out. He had a knee injury, so he wasn't put in a situation where he was going to have to pass block one-on-one with an elite edge defender. But I think what I saw was a lot of inside zone where you saw him collapsing that backside and creating cutback lanes. He worked very well with Gabe Jackson on a lot of those runs to kind of clear guys out. And you saw movement in the running game, which is something that he hasn't shown a lot of. I'm going to be real interested to see what the tape looks like, obviously, tomorrow or Tuesday and see how much movement he got. But you saw the backside there. There was a lot of opportunities if Jacobs wanted to cut off that inside zone and he had an opportunity to working to Parker's side. Now, I don't know if it's a lot of it's Parker, if it's a combination of him and Jackson, but I think they both had pretty good games. And this is the kind of game where, fortunately for us or for the Raiders, they didn't have to drop back and throw the ball 40 times with Parker in there where they were allowed to do a little bit of play action, but get him in situations and call plays that he can execute. And I think Tom Cable should get a lot of credit for the first seven games here for the Raiders sitting at 4-3, and the starting offensive line has played three snaps together, and we're down second string left guard, and you're playing basically a third string right tackle for most of the season. And I think Tom Cable should get a shout out on this podcast.
Now, when you look at it, and Cable's offensive linemen, they are mirrors of his personality. And it's a welcome sight because, you know, for years the Raiders lacked personality or they lacked an identity on offense as far as their offensive line. And he has taken that upon himself to bring that back. Now, as far as the wide receivers, because of the weather, it was difficult for them to get started where the one throw to Ruggs, and people are going to parse this game and say that they don't really quite understand how their number one draft pick gets four targets, catches two for 8 yards, and Carr missed him on which looked like be a touchdown. Do you think this was more of a product of the weather, more of a product of the Brown scheme, or just one of those games where it was a combination of all of it?
I think it's the weather, first and foremost. And you didn't see either team have much success throwing, I guess, left to right on your screen there where we missed that ball to Ruggs. I think there's still some miscommunications. You saw Ruggs kind of break that a little bit more horizontal, where Carr threw it a little bit more vertical. I don't know if that was the wind getting a hold of that. He missed him by probably 10, 15 yards. I think that was just a communication issue between the two. And then you factor in the weather. The ball kind of fluttered there. It got up in the air, and the wind took it. I wouldn't read anything to any stats. The only stat that matters in these kind of conditions is the win and loss column, and the Raiders got the W. I don't think any player on that team is concerned about the stats they put up in this game. And the national media, they might run with it and say, oh, look what Brandon Ayuk's doing. Look what all these rookie wide receivers are doing. And look at, you know, Ruggs' 7-8 catches on the season, but his impact is obvious. And now that we're going to get back and get some home games going on the road next week against San Diego, playing in a lot more domes and a lot better weather, you're going to see his numbers take off. I have no issues or concerns with Ruggs at this point.
I don't either, and I think that it's just more of just trying to get back into a rhythm where I would have liked for Carr to complete that pass, but like we talked before the show, it's a win. It's a win against a 500, like a team that's above 500 on the road in this weather. And we can't sit there and nitpick one errant pass that should have been six. Now, what we can nitpick is the stunning lack of pass rush. Again, Baker Mayfield emerged from the game. The Raiders didn't get home at all. Is it worry time?
I think it has been worry time. The pass rushing conditions weren't ideal on a wet field. I think they hit him one time. There might be some pressures. I didn't get the feeling watching the game he was standing back there and had plenty of time to throw and was just missing guys. There were some drops that obviously helped the Raiders' defense get off the field. But the encouraging thing I saw in this game is you saw Max Crosby play a lot of that right defensive end across from the left tackle. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that. Carl Nassib got a lot of snaps at the other defensive end. And then Farrell played inside a little bit, but I think they've come to the point where they realize that he's not effective in there, and you started to see other guys get snaps inside. Losing Mo Hurst potentially could be a big issue for this team moving forward, depending on the severity of his injury. But hopefully David Irving's ready to go if Mo has to miss any amount of time. But it is very concerning, the pass rush going forward. The defensive pass coverage is going to have to hold up a little bit as well. But I think when you start getting inside of domes, you start playing a little bit lower competition that's coming up, the offense is still going to have to carry this team.
Where I look at the pass rush, like you said, you mentioned, I don't know why. Well, I know why, because he was a number one pick, but Crosby just seemed like he's a better fit on the right side. It just seemed like it's a better fit. It's a better fit for what he wants to do.
No, it definitely is. And Farrell actually is a better fit on the other side that Crosby's been playing for the last year and a half. Just as a base end that can stop the run and give you a little bit of pass rush and not have to go up against the left tackles and give him a chance to get some of the bats against the right tackle. But so hopefully we see a lot more of that moving forward.
And that's the thing I do want to see. I want to see something from the, like you said, Mo Hurst is hurt. Are we convinced that Malik Collins wasn't a good idea?
I think it's safe to say at this point it was not a good idea, and I would be shocked if he signs with the Raiders in the offseason after he finishes this one-year deal.
It just doesn't seem like it's there for him. It just something that is just – he stays blocked.
He stays blocked, and then you don't ever really see him around the quarterback getting pressures either, and that was supposed to be the thing, is he was one of the better – inside winning rush rate guys according to Pro Football Focus. I just haven't seen it. You know, maybe Cowboys fans are right. We gave them Darrell Worley and we got Malik Collins. I think both teams are regretting both of those decisions.
Yes. Even a guy like off the practice squad like Chris Smith has flashed more than Malik Collins. Like Chris Smith has shown something. He has shown where Malik Collins, when you see him, he's in the picture, basically. Like, he's in a picture during a pass that gets out of the quarterback's hand. Like, you can see the back of his jersey. He's nowhere near the quarterback. Now, if we move to the linebackers, Nick Kawakowski is maybe one of the better signings that they've had in the last couple of years. It just, he excels. Like, it's not... We mentioned all podcast. It's not pretty, but it's effective. He forced a fumble. He's there. He may not be tremendous in coverage, but he does enough. What did you see today from number 44?
I think obviously creating the turnover is something this team doesn't do, is create turnovers for him to get that on the opening drive, hopefully set the tone for the team. The biggest thing that I notice is he's a solid player all around, but the biggest thing that he can do is help the run defense. You always see him communicating. He's shifting the line. When there's motions and there's shifts, He's in the middle of that defense, making sure everyone has their gap responsibilities. And you didn't really see that with Nick Moreau having to play the middle. He takes charge of that defense, and him and John Abraham in the middle are two good players. And I like Kwiatkowski a lot. I wish he was a better pass defender, but he's not bad. He can stay in those hook curl areas, and he can read screens. And you saw him chase down the guy, the tight end, and create the fumble. But no, he's by far had the best impact of any of the defenders that they signed as free agents.
Like, he does enough in pass coverage where you're like, okay, he's not going to be a liability. Okay, he's enough. And he is miles ahead of what the Raiders had as far as linebackers and coverage. It's funny because if you look at the Browns and coverage, they had our old friend Malcolm Smith, who hasn't really gotten better in coverage, but that's another story. But Kowalkowski is enough in pass coverage where he won't Tahir Whitehead and get torched. Like, he won't get abused on those quick passes. He will be there to make, and he is a sure tackler. Now, Corey Littleton is a guy where, even going into his game, people were kind of saying that he is miscast in his defense. Do you think that he's miscast in his defense, or do you think that he may not have been what was tracked up to be before he got to Vegas?
I think he's learning a new system. The concerning part to me is the missed tackles. When he has an opportunity in the open field to get there, he's missed too many. I want to say coming into the game he had 9, and there's 2 off the top of my head I can think of in the game, so he's at least has 11 on the season after having 0 last year. It's the impact plays. I don't know if he's being put in a position to get sacks, to get turnovers, force fumbles, interceptions. You saw him a lot again against running backs. I'd like to see him cover tight ends a little bit more. And hopefully as we get into conference play or division play over the next 3 weeks and with the Chargers, the Broncos, and the Chiefs, as you see him a little bit more covering tight ends, I would still wait on him for the impact. It could be any week now. I like Littleton as a player. I think him and Kwiatkowski together can give him they could be an average pair of linebackers, which is a lot better than anything the Raiders have had in the last 10 or 15 years. So I think he's still struggling to pick up the system, and we got to put him in a better situation.
Now, when we shift towards the secondary, I actually want to talk about LaMarcus Joyner first. And he's a guy who has been, as we talked about, he's miscast as a slot safety, as a slot corner. It looked as though late in the game that he was playing a little bit safety. He had a jarring hit on Landry to jar the ball loose. Going forward, do you believe, because of the dearth of talent that is on the other side of Jonathan Abraham at safety, do you believe that Joyner, his fourth quarter play will translate into him playing safety more?
I think it will in certain packages. So I actually noticed this during the game, and I went back and watched the defensive snaps. He actually took 3 snaps at safety in the game. 2 of them were on 3rd and 15. There was 1 in the second quarter with about 4 minutes left. It was an incomplete screen to the fullback, where the Raiders were basically in a dime defense, and they had a 3-man line with 2 linebackers. And then Abram was kind of playing that joker position, that stand-up position that you saw Arden Key play a lot. And that was actually Jonathan Abram, and they moved Joyner back to safety across Merrick Harris, and they had Robertson in the slot, and they blitzed Abram both times. They did that and kind of used him as a pass rusher. So you saw that on 3rd and 15 in the second end of the second quarter, and then 3rd and 15 in the fourth quarter before the 2-minute warning when he hit Landry to break up that pass. It was kind of the same exact defensive call. There was 1 other snap where he played safety out of the base 4-3 defense, but Abram wasn't on the field. It was early in the fourth quarter. There's about 14 minutes left in the game. I don't know if Abram just missed a snap. He was in on the next play. But for them to do that and be able to move Joyner around and actually put him at safety shows that they're starting to think about moving these guys around. I don't know if that was Gruden's call. I don't know if that's Marinelli's call. Marinelli usually likes in the dime defense to have the safety, an additional safety on the field, and move Abraham up into kind of that nickel or dime backer role. But it was good to see because we haven't seen that in the last 2 years. And Joyner made a big play there to tip the ball away on the play before and then made a big play on the hit to separate the ball from Joyner or from Landry for the incompletion, led to the missed field goal and basically ended the game. But it was good to see. If it's situationally third and long, third and 15, where the Raiders have been historically bad over the last couple of years, I'm all for it.
Now, it's weird that we see him more and more, but we need to applaud Trayvon Mullen. He is starting to evolve into the player that we had all hoped, as far as being, for lack of a better term, pardon the pun, a cornerstone player. Because it's just something about how he just appears different. Like, there's something about the way that he covers up, how he approaches even tackling. It's just different. And the secondary actually did a phenomenal job on Jarvis Landry, where Baker Mayfield targeted him 11 times. He 4 catches for 52 yards is not a lot. I know, like we talked about, the weather wasn't the greatest, but when you target somebody 11 times and they only catch a third of those, that says a lot about the coverage. When Damon Arnette returns, do you think that he will just walk back into the other corner spot, or do you think that they will kind of ease him back in?
I think Gruden's going to walk him back out there, and he's going to be the starting corner opposite Mullen as soon as he's healthy. And Nevin Lawson's been okay, but I think Arnette, they took him in the first round, and they need to get him out there and give him an opportunity to be a playmaker. And Lawson's probably could slide inside then and play the nickel if they want to use Joyner more as a safety and use Abram more as a guy that roams around the middle of the defense, whether that's a nickel or dime back or whether that's in a stand-up rushing position as a joker and just kind of move him around. But I would expect Arnette to walk into a starting job the minute he's activated from IR.
Now, as when I look at this team and I look at the fact that A.J. Cole only punted it once, and we had mentioned the long drives. Looking toward next week, the Raiders have the Los Angeles Chargers coming in, and they of the chargering, which is losing a 21-point lead late and losing the game. When you look at that team, I know that they have a rookie quarterback, but they have such weapons on offense. What about the Chargers' offense gives you the most pause and concern?
I think it's the two wide receivers. It's Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. Those guys can beat anybody. I think Mullen's going to have his hands full with whichever one he's guarding, and we have to figure out a way to cover the other guy. Because I'm not sure Nevin Lawson's up to the challenge to hold up in one-on-one coverage with either one of those guys for an extended amount of time. And then you have Hunter Henry working in the middle of the field out of the tight end position. And Justin Herbert, for a rookie, has played really well. And he's got a really big arm. He can get outside the pocket. You don't see him making those bad decisions he made at Oregon and throwing into coverage. He's mobile. He can scramble. I think this is going to be a game that's going to be a little bit harder than a lot of Raider fans think. They just see the Chargers 2-5 and they think it's a W. I think this is going to be a hard-fought game within the division. And don't sleep on the Chargers defense. I know they gave up 31 to the Broncos today, but Bosa and Ingram have always given the Raiders problems. They have cover guys, but I think they can line up and run the ball and be physical with them, with their front. And those guys want to rush the passer. They don't want to stop the run. And then the linebacker, if you ask me the weakness on that defense, it's the linebackers. And I think the Raiders need to line up and pound the ball again next week.
And it's strange when you look at the Chargers on offense. Justin Herbert he's a big dude, but like you said, he's a big mobile dude. And he throws the deep ball with ease. It just kind of just rolls off his hands. It's there with velocity, and it's also there with pretty good touch deep. And those two receivers looking, if you spin it forward and we focus on that defense, you mentioned Joey Bosa. I'm about to probably butcher somebody's name, and this is going to be bad, but Uchenna Nwosu is actually second on the team. I think he's second on the team in sacks. And with him and with that pass rush, you mentioned the linebackers. The linebackers are – they're just I don't understand how you have a potent front four and then you put those linebackers behind them. But if we flip it towards our Raiders defense, this will, because of pass being prologue, this is a game that Cleveland Farrell has a big game, and you know why. The majority of his sacks have come against the Chargers, and I have a feeling that that's not going to change. There's something about that uniform or those tackles that seemingly like wakes him up. Now, quick prediction without, you know, just a gut feeling. How do you see that game going on Sunday?
Well, I think it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be closer than a lot of Raider fans think. They probably think it's an easy W. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think both offenses are going to go up and down the field. I'd like to give the win to the Raiders, but it's going to be close. Something in the 33-27, 33-28 type game. The good thing is the offensive line is probably the weakest part in offense for the Chargers, and the Raiders front, defensive front, have to figure out how to get pressure on a rookie. And I'm asking a lot, but I think Gunther's going to have to mix up his coverages and try to confuse Herbert. And he's a really smart guy, and he hasn't really been confused that much. He's really good against the blitz so far in his career, but when you're playing a rookie quarterback, they're going to have to stop the run. But I wouldn't blitz him too much and leave those corners one-on-one with those wide receivers. I think it's going to be mixing up coverages and hopefully force them into one or two turnovers that are the difference in the game.
I agree with that. Now, before we get out of here, can you tell people when your content hits social media and where can they follow you?
They can follow me on Twitter at rholm22. That's RHOLM22. The film breakdowns probably be out hopefully Monday night this week, but it might be Tuesday. Just kind of when I get a chance to break it down, but I'll have it all up there for you guys to see: the good plays, the bad plays, some things that some players did well, some that some might not have done well. But try to keep it positive, especially after a win, and hopefully they can get the ball rolling and the Raiders can put together a little win streak here. Three games in a row in the division. These are huge games.
Now, you can follow our content, fullpresscoverage.com/Raiders or at fullpress_Raiders on Twitter. For Ryan Holmes, I am Terrence Biggs. This has been an episode, a happy episode, of Full Press Raiders podcast. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Good night.